Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Morning, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, Text 25.
Asaknuvam stadviraham
munchan baspa kalam muhu
asinchadam bhavatseti net Tro de duhitu sika asaknuvam tadviraham munchan baspa kalam muhu asincharam bhavatseti netro de duhitu sika Asaknuvam stadviraham munchan baspan kalam muhu baspa kalam asincharam bhavatseti netro de duhitu sika.
Word for word. Asaknuvam, being unable to bear.
Tatviraham,
separation from her. Munchan, shedding. Baspakalam, tears. Muhu, again and again. Asinchat, he drenched. Amba, my dear mother. Vatsa, my dear daughter. Iti, thus. Netra Udai, by the water from his eyes. Duhitu, of his daughter. Sika, the locks of hair. Translation. The emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter. Therefore, tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." Translation, please repeat. The emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter. Therefore, tears poured from his eyes again and again. Drenching his daughter's head as he cried. My dear mother, my dear daughter. Purport. The word Amba is significant. A father sometimes addresses his daughter in affection as mother and sometimes as my darling. The feeling of separation occurs because until the daughter is married, she remains the daughter of the father, but after her marriage, she is no longer claimed as a daughter in the family. She must go to the husband's house, for after marriage she becomes the property of the husband. According to Manusamhita, a woman is never independent. She must remain the property of the father while she is not married, and she must remain the property of the husband until she is elderly and has grown up children of her own. In old age, when the husband has taken sannyas and left home, she remains the property of the sons. A woman is always dependent, either upon the father, husband, or elderly sons. That will be exhibited in the life of Devahuti. Devahuti's father handed over responsibility for her to the husband, Karadama Muni. In the same way, Karadama Muni also left home, giving the responsibility to his son, Kapiladev. This narration will describe these events one after another.
Asaknuvam stadviraham munchan baspa kalamhu Asin charambavatseti netro de duvitu sikaha.
Emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter, therefore tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." So a few weeks ago when I was here, we were reading about the glories of Karadabha Muni and how Svayambhuva Manu was very happy and satisfied and to approach Kardama Muni and ask that Kardama Muni accept his daughter in marriage, because Kardama Muni is very, very qualified. Brahmachari, he was living Brahmachari life. So he had all wonderful qualities. He naturally was absorbed in thinking always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, I seem to remember in this chapter that after he conversed with Svayambhuva Manu and I think Satarupa and everyone, immediately after the conversation he went silent, and Prabhupada explained, yes, because he just went into meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was speaking, and then when there was no speaking, he was just meditating on the Lord. So this is a sign of very, very advanced devotee. There's never a moment when they are not thinking of Krishna. So this is Kardama Muni, very, very elevated. And it must have been also, and we know from reading about Devahuti, that she was very, very qualified also. She had wonderful qualities. Of course, being the princess, she would have had, been raised in a very nice family, had all sorts of nice education, and had all the nice womanly qualities. It is said that all the women are actually representatives of Lakshmi Devi. So doesn't matter they're grown up, elderly, grown up, or just still the children. Ladies are always considered in that way, representative of Lakshmi Devi. Therefore, they're given all respect. And at Prabhupada, of course, he says that Svayambhuva Manu was very affectionate to his daughter. As generally the case, fathers are very generally affectionate to their daughters, and maybe the mothers to their sons or something like that, I've heard. But so he was very, very affectionate, and out of affection, Prabhupada says that he cried tears of separation when he handed his daughter over, my daughter, my mother even, because if someone is thinking that the women, and no matter what age, are representative of Lakshmi Devi, then she is like the mother. Lakshmi Devi is like the mother. So if someone is representing Lakshmi Devi like that, so even though they're the daughter, they sometimes can be referred to like that. But of course, out of affection, my dear daughter, out of affection. So here Prabhupada explains that what was the culture from before, that the ladies were always under the protection, of the family. When they were young, unmarried, of course, under the protection of the father and the family. And then when they get married, they're under the protection. Property actually uses the word property. They are the property. But we have to understand this very carefully. Property. Just like any property. A property is valuable, isn't it? If you have a property, it is very, very valuable. You have to protect it. You're not going to go and smash your own property, is it? If you have a property, you're going to go smash. Only a crazy man would go and smash his own property. So it's very valuable. You protect it, you maintain it, you nurture it, you increase its value by all your efforts. By all your efforts. So many different ways. So, you know, this use of the word property, and he uses it you know, the property of the father, of course, the property of the father and the property of the husband and the property of the sons, the grown-up sons. But in reference to giving them proper protection, maintaining them, they are very valuable. So we should understand this very carefully. So too often this has been abused. I claim proprietorship, then I can do all sorts of abuse. This is, in the Western countries, this is sometimes a mentality. And in India and other countries, sometimes this is, they have a lot of trouble because people misunderstand what is husband-wife relationship, my property, therefore I can do anything I want. But actually, if you're really regarding it as your property, then you would pay very careful attention to it. You would pay very careful attention to it. As I said, no one in their right mind is going to abuse their own property. As I said, you protect it, you maintain it, you put all your efforts into nurturing and increasing its value more and more. So therefore, you know, the daughter, you're going to get the daughter nicely educated, looking after all their needs, they have affection. You don't abuse the situation. So this has to be understood very carefully. This brings up the question of the, you know, abuse in a domestic situation. There's a lot of talk about this, domestic violence. So many problems can be man to the woman to the man. It can be verbal, it can be physical, emotional, all different levels of the abuse. It become a big issue. It has been a big issue for a long time. And in India also, it is a big issue. The abuse in the family situation. So the ladies are to be treated with great respect and given protection and with all affection, especially by the father and the family and by the husband. And of course, the ladies have to also understand their particular position. Now, ladies are protected because there's very easy chance of exploitation. And so they are protected very carefully. So by the father, when the young girls are growing up, they are protected, and then, of course, the husband, and then the son. So it's a very nice culture, looking after. These days, especially in the Western countries, there's not so much a mentality of that. The family has become a little dysfunctional, and the families, especially in Western countries, perhaps are not so close as they grow older. They go separately, pursue different, and especially when they now in the culture, in the Vedic culture, in India, we still see that the parents, they're looked after. The parents are looking after the children right from the birth and looking after them, and as they grow up, so much effort is there, and it takes a lot of finance also to make sure everything is all right on that level. So the husband has to take that. The father takes that responsibility, and the husband takes that responsibility, and later on the sons take that responsibility. Prabhupada actually said on a few occasions that it should be so nice in the family that women are looking after the home very nicely in the traditional Vedic culture, and the children very nicely. The woman shouldn't have to go to work. He actually said that. He said the women in the Vedic times, they shouldn't have to, they're not going to work. And it's very rare, I remember, in my father's time and our grandparents' time, it was very rare for the ladies to go to work. They didn't work. The man went to work. The ladies looked after the family. Now it's becoming common. Now the whole situation in so many countries of the world is becoming so expensive to live that, you know, the one income is insufficient. Everything's so expensive, it's becoming more and more and more because of this greed principle, you see. The greed principle has driven everything up. Everyone wants to profit, and so they want to profit, they want to maximize their profit, and they do some cheating. Out of greed, they do cheating. And so when they're cheating, not only maximizing their profit, but cheating, and then the other one becomes the cheated, and then they have to also cheat, to also bring in some money. Now, Prabhupada has said this many times, that the society of the cheaters and the cheated. And it becomes like a vicious, what we call the vicious circle, going round and round. And so everything escalates more and more. Everything becomes more and more expensive. No one can afford to live. The husband has to work. The wife has to work. And the children are left. You know, they try to do their best, but the situation is... It was mentioned previously that Svambhuva Manu, when he came to the ashram of Kadama Muni, that Kadama Muni was living in a nice area with other ashrams, and so it was the he appreciated the beauty of and the simplicity of the sadhus' ashrams. Certainly, Svambhuva Manu, being emperor, had a very opulent situation in the palace and so many things like that. But still, living simply also has its beauty. And so Svambhuva Manu appreciated the nice life, and he must have had so much appreciation. He was giving his daughter to Kadama Muni. So, you know, the consideration of who I should give my daughter to was not just based on one thing. What is the material opulence, or what is this, or what is that? It was based on many things. Compatibility, of course, has to be there on many levels. What are the qualities of the, what is the character of a person? What is the age? Of course, there has to be a physical attraction. The nature has to be similar. They have to be able to get on. All these considerations. And so, I mean, in today's society, it's mainly just based on, you know, physical attraction. You know, the girl likes the boy, looks the looks of the boy, and the boy likes the looks of the girl. And then after some time, I love you, and I love you, and after 6 months, I hate you. Get away from me. You see, so this is a very shallow type of attraction, superficial. So therefore, what can last? What can last? So the marriage is a heavy responsibility. So one has to go into it very carefully, and therefore the families were involved. The families were involved. Their experience, and so, you know, Svambhuva Manu and Satarupa, the queen, they were involved, and so many were involved. They wanted to also, he wanted to make sure that the husband would be a good match for his daughter. I mean, you just think about that. You know, those of your parents must know. You put so much, you have so much affection, love and affection for your daughter. You've, you know, worked hard to protect her, to bring her up, to educate her. Naturally, you want to see that she marries a nice husband. What, you're going to give your daughter over to someone who's not very qualified, or someone who's very abusive? Or, you want to make sure everything's nice. So, and Kadama Muni also was so qualified, even though he was very detached, he thought it would be a good opportunity. And so someone who's been a good brahmachari like that, it is said, someone who's been good brahmachari, of course, you know, someone can say brahmachari all their life, like naishtika brahmachari. But that's very rare, someone who's naishtika brahmachari, or the whole life brahmachari. There's some, but not so many. Generally, but it's good to have the brahmachari training. Builds up the good character, good qualities, good attitude, and of course the Krishna consciousness in the brahmachari. Those who are brahmacharis, and And of course, Prabhupada made provision for the ladies also, brahmacharinis, to get the training in the Krishna consciousness, to build nice qualities. And then compatibility has to be there. But main thing in today's purport, Prabhupada emphasizes on this, the women being protected and not independent in the sense that they can be exploited. Not repressed. One should understand this correctly. Again, I emphasize this point. That doesn't give license. When Prabhupada uses the word property, the property of the father, the property doesn't give license to make for abusive situation. So this culture, the Vedic culture, is something that is good for society. Of course, maybe in the modern times, people don't agree with it so much. They see things differently. But we have to see what is the quality of the civilization, of the culture. People becoming happier in. Of course, if there's abuse, that's one thing. But the culture in the Vedic, everything was very nice. And also, you know, especially when the parents become elderly. And the mother becomes elderly, especially she's looked after by her grown-up sons. I remember one time many years ago when I was temple president of Sydney Temple, that one lady, her husband had passed away at an early age. He had some cancer or something like that. So she was very upset. But she had two sons, and I said, well, your husband has passed, but her sons were teenagers at that time. And she was an accountant, so she had to go to work. But I said, but you can take comfort because you have two sons. You have two sons, and only in a few years' time, your sons will be growing up. And she was saying to me, oh, what will happen? Who will look after me? My husband has died. Like that, she was very concerned. I said, yes, this is a difficult situation for you. But then again, you have your two sons. So when I said like that, she was an Indian lady. she felt a bit comforted. Yes, my two sons are there. They will look after me. And sure enough, as they grew up, they looked after the mother. Now these days, and especially in Western countries, they don't want to look after the parents. They want to put them in the homes. They go in the homes, this and that and the other thing. And governments have to pay money to create these facilities for the elder generation, and it's actually a big drain on the economy. Big drain on the economy. So many things are a big drain on the economy. So many hospitals, the health of people, because they engage in activities that are very detrimental to the health, very sinful. So many people get sick, they get their karma, they get sick, and so on. So many hospitals are there, so many old age facilities are there. So the government has to spend so much money on creating these facilities for the elderly people because the families won't look after them. And now, of course, the government has to build the facility so it's cheaper for them to pay someone who's the carer. Maybe the daughter can be paid to be the carer, so the government has to give this type of enticement. But in the Vedic culture, this would automatically be there. So especially the sons have to take that responsibility in the family. You know, the father takes the responsibility, and if their sons are there, they have to take the responsibility. The parents, they have to look after them in the elderly age. So they have to expect that, yes, they will look after them. Maybe they will come and live with us. I think this is quite common in the Indian culture, isn't it? That the mother and the father, they will come and live with us. But it's not so common in the Western culture. You don't find that so much. You know, come and live with us. But anyway, we have to understand these. Prabhupada made many different statements like this. And we can understand so many points that he makes. That first of all, he says that the ladies right from the childhood have to be protected and looked after, and always always in that situation of protection. And then as far as the men are concerned, at some stage they have to become detached from the family life and retire. We have here the example of Kadama Muni himself. He was given the hand of Devahuti, but then at later on he retired and handed over the responsibility to his son Kapila. Of course, Kapila Dev, incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who better to look after someone than the incarnation of the Supreme? So we can understand these personalities are very, very exalted. Kadama Muni, Devahuti, their son was Kapila Dev. Kapila Dev was the son. So we know that Kapila Dev's instructions to Devahuti later on, they are recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the men also have to practice some, because the grihastha life, if one is a good grihastha, then that's very good. One can be very Krishna conscious, but at the same time, there's certain attachments that build up to the house, to the house itself. One can be very, very attached to the house. I remember when Prabhupada came to Melbourne. Before here, we used to rent one place in Burnett Street in St Kilda, and in the backyard was all concrete. In the backyard, very small backyard, but there was just one solitary tree. And Prabhupada commented. He said, yeah, that tree, he said, that was the former owner. He was so attached to this place, he came back as a tree in the backyard. So one can become attached to all sorts of things. You become attached to whatever. So to break your attachments, and then there's a system of retiring. Of course, there's vanaprastha. That can be both husband and wife together for some time. But at some point, there has to be a separation of the husband and wife, just to practice that detachment, that vairagya. And detachment is... We see Kadama Muni was detached even before he got married. And so, as a brahmachari, there's that certain a mood of detachment. So it's going to be a little bit easier later on in life to come back to that detachment. You see, if you're early in your life, you'll practice detachment, and later on, it won't be so hard. But if your whole life has been attachment, attachment, and build up more and more and more attachment, then at the end of the life, and some people think that we'll just leave everything to the last moment, you know, just before I die, then I'll become detached. Well, that's not a guarantee that you'll be so detached at that point. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, he used to have one saying like that. Later on I will do it, he used to say like that. Everyone says, later on I will do it. But he said, but when will that later come? And then he coined that phrase, anything auspicious should be done immediately. Anything auspicious should be done immediately. Some would always say, later. He would preach to them about the Krishna consciousness. And they would say, oh, later I will do it. And some people, they think like that. Later I will do it. In India, when I give lectures sometimes, Swami, yes, later we will take up more seriously. I said, why not? Why later? Why not now? Who knows when that later will come? Later may never come. Why miss opportunity? Do now. So generally, especially in India, and other countries also, that people think that the spiritual life, the religious life is for at the end of the life. Now is the time for the working, and only the working, concentrating. I told one time before one story that a young couple were started to come to the temple very regularly, and they were just newly married from India, and they were working, but they were coming to the temple. And then all of a sudden we didn't see them, and for many months, and then I saw the husband just in passing somewhere. I said, oh, we haven't seen you. Oh, yes, my family came, and then when they heard that I was going to the temple, they said, "Oh no, that's for later." I said, "Now is the time for hard working and making money." I said, "Later in the life you can go to the temple. Now don't go to the temple. Just now, hard work, make money." I said, no, 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 that is not the, you have to find a good balance in the life, you know, because who knows when the opportunity will come to take up the spiritual life. Actually, Prahlad Maharaj says, Kormaram. He says, right from the very beginning, you should practice the spiritual life in all the ashrams. You know, from the brahmachari, the grihastha, all the ashram, you should practice the Krishna consciousness. And of course, later, at the end of the life, then the full detachment must be there to fix yourself just on the Supreme Personality without any distraction. So we see the example of these great personalities. And we see our acharyas, Prabhupada, you know, a married life, and then, you know, Vanaprastha, and then after some time, sannyas. Kausila Bhaktisiddhanta was brahmachari, Naishtika brahmachari, then all the whole life, and the sannyas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at a certain stage, he detached himself, even though he had big family. So many children, 10 children, he had big family. He lived a very nice, even in his grihastha life, he was very Krishna conscious. And then, but at some point, he became detached. So this is the example given and followed by Kardama Muni. And then, of course, Kapila assumed a responsibility and we'll learn more about that as we read through this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I'll just read this verse again if anyone has any question. Asak nuvam stadviraham munchan bashpa kalamuhu Asin chat amba vatse ti netrode duitu shika. Emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter, therefore tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." has anyone got any question they'd like to ask? Comment? To what?
To retire.
If
sannyas is not practical.
The vanaprastha.
Yeah, but even then, they're still together.
Sorry?
They're still together.
Right? Well, no, at a certain point, maybe in the beginning, there's different levels of the vanaprastha. So in the beginning, of course, the grihastha, then retired life, of course, the children have grown up. Generally, we see in India, you see a lot of the retired, they go to the holy places together and they visit. That's good. You know, all that type of thing is very, very good. And you go together. But at some point, then detachment from even wife from the husband from the wife, and an arrangement can be made. And then as far as sannyas, yes, well, if someone, they can stay in vanaprastha, not everyone has to go to the sannyas, but to the stage of detachment, has to be there, and then because we want to be serious about our absorption in Krishna consciousness. So when one is elderly, then at least a vanaprastha stage, and then if one has impetus to go to total to the sannyas stage, then that is also opportunity. So ISKCON we have all sorts of we encourage vanaprastha ashram. We encourage all the ashrams, brahmachari ashram, and we grihastha ashram, and vanaprastha ashram, and of course there's sannyas ashram. But vanaprastha, we want to see more vanaprastha ashram. Vanaprastha ashram is a very good opportunity, especially in ISKCON, because then you're retired, all the children grown up, you don't have any, then you can come and do full-time service in the temple. This is a detachment. Yes, Gana.
From experience, when you leave the brahmachari ashram, you know, with that mood of detachment, you enter the grihastha ashram, that mood of detachment is not a healthy mood in some ways, because there has to be, now you're forming an attachment to your wife. At least the attachment is towards one person, not the whole community of women or men.
Yeah, that detachment has to be mature. You know, in the brahmachari ashram, detachment from desire for, indulgence in sense gratification. and engagement in Krishna consciousness. So that can carry over, but you know sometimes it's seen that when one goes from the brahmacharya to the grihastha, then that the detachment can be in a negative kind of way, that one has to understand now I've moved from this ashram and now I'm in the grihastha ashram, therefore what are my duties in the grihastha ashram? Therefore one should understand what are the duties in the brahmacharya ashram. Detachment is there also as far as grihastha ashram, not grihamedi, where just a total indulgence in just like we see materialists, that in the family life mean total indulgence in sense gratification. And quite often sinful activities. So one doesn't move from brahmachari ashram to that. But still there's an air of detachment as far as that's concerned, but at the same time one has, now one's in another ashram, and one has to be mature about what are my duties in the grihastha ashram. Both man and woman has to understand, they can ask, learn about that from those who are very experienced in giving instructions. The shastras give so many instructions. They can approach their guru, how to be a nice grihastha and what attitude I should have. It should be a nice mature attitude. Now I've moved from brahmachari or brahmacharini to grihastha, a different ashram, so therefore I have to understand how to nicely live in this ashram. And then when you go from that ashram to the vanaprastha, okay, that now is another ashram. What is my duties in this ashram? It'll be different from a little bit different from grihastha ashram. But through all the ashrams, there has to be a mood of detachment from sense gratification. That mood is there in all the ashrams. That's the meaning of ashram, actually. Yes. Any other questions? Yes, please. Well, ultimately, everything is Krishna's property, but we are given responsibility for the time being while we're engaging in the service. I remember there was a little bit of dispute. One example where someone, was it here? I can't remember the Prabhupada, but some Prabhupada explained, gave the example. He said, just because it's Krishna's property doesn't mean you can just think, do anything you want. We have to understand that everything is Krishna's property. But we are given an allotment to use in his service. And while we're using it in his service, it is like our property, but ultimately we understand ultimately it's not our property, it's Krishna's property. He said, and then Prabhupada gave the example, just like this watch. This watch, everything comes from Krishna. But now I am using this watch in Krishna's service. So it's not that everything is Krishna's, then you can just come and take and just go and say, oh, Krishna's property. Therefore, let me take your dhoti from you. Let me take your sari. Let me take your car. Let me take, oh, Krishna's property. This is Mayavadi, you see. This is Mayavadi thinking. Everything is one, therefore, let we do whatever we want. No. So Krishna's property, yes. But now Krishna has given you something. You are responsible. You have to do your duty. And you have to just, but the problem, as I explained, when Prabhupada uses this word property, it is very valuable, is to give protection, to maintain, to nurture, to increase, like that. So we have to understand Krishna's property, but now we have allotment, we're using these things. We understand it is all Krishna's property, but now I'm using this property of Krishna's. He has given it to me to use in his service. So now it is under my care. So this should be the attitude. Yes, ma'am.
What is the position of ISKCON in order to provide protection to women that might find themselves later on in life, like they didn't get married or they didn't have children?
Someone who didn't get married?
They didn't have children.
Someone who got married and didn't have children.
Both. And what's the position of ISKCON?
What is their position?
Yeah, to protect the women later on. Yes,
ISKCON has a responsibility as far as that's concerned. The ladies who didn't get married, they're staying in the ashram. And You know, the Brahmacharini, sometimes I saw with Prabhupada even that in the time of the marriage, because the ladies were single and they were to be married, the president would come, the president of the temple would give them away in marriage if the father and the mother weren't there. You know, sometimes the father and mother. So those who were living in the ashram under the protection of the temple, and those who are the heads of the managers of the temple. So therefore, when they grow older, this is something that we've been talking about on the GBC level, how to look after our older devotees, both men and women, and how to, we're currently doing a big construction in Mayapur. Badri Narayan Swami is overseeing that, to build many, many apartments there, and mainly they will be for the devotees who have rendered long-time service in ISKCON. They're not married, haven't been married, and now they're elderly. They can go to the Mayapur and live there very nicely, like that. So, as far as they're the single ones who've remained single. Those are the ones who have been married. Well, I mean, generally speaking, if their families they don't have any grown up children, well, and if they're devotees, then the temple will try to help them as much as possible. Generally, if there's no, just even in the Vedic times, if there was no children, then the other family members, the uncles and the auntie, they would all get involved in that situation. So, but if they've been full-time devotees, then of course the responsibility is there with the temple to look after them in their older age. Yes, ma'am. He was what as well?
Affection for her daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And even today, times as well, we see like fathers are more attached to the daughters. So is it because of the protection feature, or is there something else?
No, I mean, it's natural to have affection for the family members, love and affection. We see Swambhuva Manu, such a great exalted, he was crying out of separation. So it's natural. But of course, you know, these are very, the consciousness is different. The consciousness is very high, whereas someone else's consciousness may be just on the mundane platform, and so it's not that the devotees don't have affection, don't have love in the family. They have to, they're practicing detachment, so that means there can be no affection, there can be no love. No, it is detachment has to be understood as far as indulgence in mundane sense gratification, but as far as a responsibility of the family, there will be naturally affection, there will be naturally love. So, but at the same time, one is thinking of the best situation for my family members in the Krishna consciousness. Any other questions? Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Go Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.